Good morning and welcome to the programme. Today, to fly or not to fly, we speak to political and health experts on managing travel during COVID-19. Policing the pubs, what should happen when bars are openly flouting the rules? Waiting for the phone to ring, we look at who might get the 17 junior ministries to be announced today. 1,800 men and women gathered for the funeral of Republican Bobby Storey in Northern Ireland yesterday, despite the global pandemic. We'll speak to Sinn Féin's Piers Doherty and why he felt it was right to be there. Financial advisor Owen McGee has advice on how to protect your pension during the COVID-19 pandemic. And take me to the island. We speak to the couple who won a competition to take care of the famous Blasket Island. All that and lots more to come between now and 12 o'clock. If you'd like to contact the programme, you can text us on 51551. You can tweet at Today Radio RTE or you can email todayradio@rte.ie. Now, as the country adjusts to most aspects of Irish life, reopening under phase three, one of the most complicated decisions for people at the moment is the issue of trips abroad to see family, to return to work or simply to go on holiday. And today is the busiest morning for flights in Dublin Airport in more than 3 months. So in a moment we'll hear from Michael McNamara, Dermot Jewell, Professor Rory Brua and Donal O'Keefe. But first, Evelyn O'Rourke is in Dublin Airport. And Evelyn, who is flying and where are they going?
Well, Sarah, greetings from a quiet enough, I'd have to say, departures area in Terminal 1 here in Dublin Airport. I would describe it as a steady, quiet stream of passengers coming through. I mean, just to give you some context here, they are expecting 200 flights in and out today, which is an increase already of up from 100 flights yesterday. But I'd still say it's quiet enough here. Lots of international voices here. When you talk to them, they say they're returning home after lockdown, for example. And almost all of those new flights today would have been organised and offered by Ryanair. But you are seeing flights to popular holiday destinations, Faroes up there, Malaga, Alicante, for example. And there are some good spirits, maybe a bit more muted than you'd expect, possibly, and more than maybe you'd expect this time of year in departure lounge. As you know, July in Dublin Airport would usually have been full of smiles and people heading off on their lovely holidays, but definitely quieter today. However, I did find some excited passengers who are extremely keen to get on board and get on their holidays. So you'll hear some of those voices now.
I'm flying to Amsterdam, love, I am. Well, to get high as a motherfucker.
We're going to Amsterdam for sightseeing, we're going to do the Heineken bar and then go down the canals and enjoy the scenery. And the nightlife, we love the nightlife.
Are you worried about flying?
No, I'm not.
Your nanny sent you to wear a mask.
My nanny told me to harness my whole body.
How long are you going for?
Only going for 3 days.
And what's your plan when you come back? Will you quarantine?
Ah, yes, of course, yeah.
2 week quarantine.
And it's worth it for 3 days?
Ah, yeah. Well, we're at the being sitting in the lockdown for something, so a weekend trip, well, a 3 day trip should do us, you know what I mean?
We're out work now the last, 4 months. Well, only about 4 months I am, so, you know what I mean? I had to spend the savings somewhere.
Are you worried about getting sick over there?
I am not. I am fit and healthy. I'm an athlete.
We'll be sticking to the social distancing over there, and we will. So.
So when you come back, you're going to hide away?
Stay away from Nanny and Grandad for 2 weeks.
You're heading off to Amsterdam this morning?
Yeah.
Why are you going?
Just a little break, just for 2 days.
And is this the first time you've been away since the lockdown?
Yeah, I haven't moved, yeah.
Tony Holland, the chief medical officer, has said people shouldn't take part in trips that aren't essential. What did you feel about that advice?
It's up to everyone to make their own choices. We face the consequences, if there is any.
And what about quarantining when you come home? How do you feel about that?
I'll just have to stay in for 2 weeks. That's fine. It'll be worth it.
Malaga.
Yeah. Essential travelling.
Come here, were you worried at all about flying?
No. Belfast is pretty good when it comes to the virus. We've got away quite late, so...
How long are you going to go for?
We're away for a week.
Do you have to quarantine when you come home?
No.
Over there, it seems, they've opened up the last week or two anyway, so it seems to be all right.
And you coming back via Dublin?
Mm-hmm.
And you go straight home to Belfast?
Yeah.
Well, wasn't that amazing, Evelyn? You met people going essential travelling to Malaga, you met athletes, the whole lot, loads of different people there speaking to you at Dublin Airport. Okay, so we know that the airport, along with much of the aviation industry, has had a very difficult few months, obviously, and we were speaking indeed to the DAA last week about that. What does this morning's activity mean for them then?
Well, Sarah, I mean, obviously it's a very long climb back to reach anything like the pre-lockdown levels here. I mean, the figures are sobering. You and I did a piece out here a few weeks ago where they were telling us that thanks to PPE cargo, that was really what was keeping them going at the time. I mean, some of the other figures that stand out, they say that traffic at Dublin and Cork airports were down 99% in April when compared with the same month last year. And on Monday, just a few days ago at Dublin Airport, 4,000 people came through the airport. This was a 96% 10% drop on the same day last. So those figures are, you know, they're incredible, really. But, you know, it's interesting. Yes, those first voices were very enthusiastic and maybe not particularly hung up too much on the implications of flying. But it was very, very different when I spoke to other passengers. I'd have to say, I thought there was a lot of uncertainty, a little bit of nervousness. People, a lot of people, very politely, but they kind of refused to speak to me. I felt they looked nearly a little bit embarrassed. And others that I spoke to, you know, they had very, very genuine reasons for travelling. They'd really thought about it. They'd thought it through. It was, you know, a big decision that they had made, and they understood the implications of it. So just going to give you a flavour of sort of different types of passengers that I met here this morning. And as you'll hear, and as it will come clear, there really were a wide range of reasons and experiences here involved with the passengers.
I'm heading to Leeds Bradford just.
And why are you going?
I'm heading out for a bit of work.
And how did you feel about flying this morning?
Dead on. Masks on, gloves on, all sanitised.
Have you flown since the lockdown?
I flew back from New York. I was in New York for 3 years, so I flew back there on March and was at home there for a while, so I get out again. money problems.
So flying to Tallinn, I'm going home.
How long is it since you've been home?
Oh, about 8 months now. I've been studying and working and now I'm going home permanently.
So you have your mask on and you're ready to go?
Yes, ready to go.
Do you have to quarantine when you get to Tallinn?
Yes, 2 weeks.
To Lublin in Poland. I'm going to visit my family, and yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Your family living there, how long is it since you've seen them?
A year.
And were you nervous about flying today or uncertain?
Yeah, very nervous. Just like the whole procedure of like flying in a plane with like strangers, and you never know who actually has it and who doesn't.
But you want to see your family?
Yeah, it's worth it.
We've come back. England. It was actually the quickest flight we've ever had. There's 30 people on the plane, straight on, straight off. It was a Ryanair plane. So yeah, we felt really good, and the staff spoke to us, didn't they? And, you know, explained to us what was going to be happening. And we're just popping over to see my mum. We've had 2 holidays cancelled. We won't be doing much, but hey ho, at least we get to see her.
And what about isolation or quarantine? Do you have to do that now?
Well, yeah, we have to. Here we do. We have to stay at my mum's for, well, it says 14 days, but we're only here for 3 or 4 days anyway, so we'll just have a few days with my mum. When we go back, we believe we have to quarantine, but that's fine because we're working from home anyway. And as long as we're taking precautions, we're confident. I wouldn't come and see my mum if I didn't think everything was okay. My brother's also just died as well, and we've not been able to travel over for that. So a messaging thing was the last time I saw him to say goodbye, which was really difficult. So
he died here in Ireland.
Yeah, so now we're going to get upset. So it's been awful.
That's so your mum has lost her son?
Yeah.
Since you've seen her?
Yeah. My mum's lost her son, and you know, it's been an extremely difficult time, and nobody can hug each other to comfort each other. That's the worst bit.
And as you say, Evelyn, really lots of very different reasons for travelling there from the people that you've met, and lots of genuine reasons too.
Absolutely. I think the figure that I'll be interested in after today is the no-shows, because it feels like there's a lot of flights on the board, but it just feels quite quiet here, so I think that'll be interesting too.
All right, Evelyn O'Rourke at Dublin Airport, thank you very much for joining us with that, and we are going to be looking at this issue in more depth after the break.
Email todayradio@rte.ie.
Well, I'm joined now in studio by the chair of the Oireachtas COVID-19 Response Committee, Independent TD for Clare, Michael McNamara, and also on the line are Dermot Jewell, Policy Advisor with Consumer Association of Ireland, and Professor Rory Brewer from the Public Health and Epidemiology Department. And thank you all very much for joining me this morning. I might come to yourself, Dermot, first, because actually we have a text in here from Siobhan in Mayo that I'd like to put to you. She says, "Hi Sarah, I'm in a dilemma now. My family of 5 haven't been away for 7 years, so we saved for 3 years, and last year we booked and paid for 2 weeks in Mallorca in a private apartment on the beach. With flights and accommodation, we've paid €3,500. We cannot afford to have any of this refunded, but we don't want to go against Dr. Houlihan's advice. Can the government not ban flights the way the decision would be made? That way the decision will be made and people will get some refunds. I can't cancel this and then afford to holiday in Ireland." Does that sum up, Dermot, that type of dilemma, the dilemmas that you're hearing from people?
It does, and good morning. It certainly does, because that's the dilemma that exists across the board. Dr. Holland's plea to many consumers, or citizens, let's call them at this stage, not to travel, was heard. Dr. Holland has become a trusted source over many months now, and it has put individuals wanting to travel who are already significantly out of pocket, in other words, they've paid in advance, and now they have a big dilemma. And the decision is, do they simply cancel and lose the money, which I, in all honesty, we've been hearing from consumers over the past number of months, they cannot afford to lose the money. But in the absence of an offer of guidance and direction, and I suppose, in all honesty, support of some form, they are left in a very, very bad position. And I have to be honest, consumers come across as the weak link in the entire chain of priority. I know for a fact businesses would not accept these practices. So something has got to be done. But the key is it needs to be done now, not over days, weeks or months. It needs to happen now to help consumers decide what to do.
Well, what is it that you think, though, needs to be done? I mean, for example, would you be on board with the idea of cancelling, banning flights?
Well, cancelling and banning flights, I mean, there are going to be a certain degree of people who will want to travel or may need to travel. We don't know which direction they're going, so I can understand that. But in all honesty, if those who do not want to travel, they have nowhere to go because they're going to, if the flight's not cancelled, then they have a problem. If the flight is to be cancelled, then in all honesty, I think if we're to be fair about it, then I would expect that some form of support or guidance is going to be needed to give to the airlines in the sense that, look, we want you to cancel the flight, and the reason we want to cancel is this, and what we will do is we will support, we will provide a fund to support for those. All you have to do is quickly advise us what are the numbers, what's the amount, and we will act upon it. But there's no consideration of any kind.
Sorry, I'm not entirely sure, Dermot, what you're suggesting there. Is it that the government will pay airlines to cancel flights, or is it that the government would ask airlines to refund customers who can't travel?
It would ask airlines to refund to customers who cannot travel if government were to provide an advice, preferably through the Department of Foreign Affairs, that consumers should not travel. That will give them an opportunity to engage with the airlines directly, and it may bring us back to the situation whereby, rather than, if you like, a fund, the support would be there to say, look, okay, under these circumstances, I know you may not want it, but at least you won't lose all your money. We'll give you a voucher.
And if the airlines just say no to that, because as you say, this has been going on for months now, questions over travelling, not getting refunds on flights if they're not cancelled and all of that. So if the airlines just say, well, look, the flight is there. If they don't want to travel, that's their fault. We're not refunding them. Where does that leave consumers?
It leaves them literally out of pocket and out of offers and out of chances to do anything whatsoever because they have engaged with a contract with an airline. The airline are providing the service and the consumer is not availing of it because they've been pleaded with not to travel for the benefit of them and everybody else in the country they're going to and their home country when they return. So they are left in a very bad position, out of pocket, out of expense and with no alternatives. Very, very poor.
All right. As I said, I'm joined in studio by Michael McNamara, Independent TD and Chair of the COVID-19 Committee. Michael, what do you make of what's going on around this? On the one hand, we have government ministers telling us they're preparing green lists for safe places to travel. And on the other hand, we have the Chief Medical Officer saying cancel your holidays.
Well, I mean, you know, you have government ministers are empowered to make law, you know, in accordance with the Act. That's unusual, but they're empowered because of the specific circumstances to make law. And then you have the Chief Medical Officer who makes recommendations. And I mean, that's the way it's always been. I mean, you have a Chief Medical Officer who makes recommendations to the government and who makes recommendations to the public. And that's how it is now. And then the government make law. And the law is that you are allowed to travel. It would be very difficult to prevent people from leaving, legally to prevent people from leaving Ireland in accordance with European Convention on Human Rights requirements, in accordance with EU law requirements.
But whatever about banning travel altogether, what about the confused messaging that we're getting here from, on the one hand, as you say, the Chief Medical Officer saying, don't travel, and the government saying, here's a list, a green list of countries that we're working on, we'll have them to you by next week.
Well, I suppose we've had that kind of confusion for months now between what is lawful and what is recommended. Oh, it's not good enough, but it's never been good enough. I mean, even here in RTE, we've had people saying to elderly people, you are not allowed to leave your home. You are now allowed to leave your home. People over 70, there was never any specific law for people over 70 or over 65 or under any age. People were never banned from leaving their home. There were recommendations that they not do so. But there was a confusion from the start between what was law and what was a medical recommendation. And I think it was a bad thing because some people felt that they were breaking the law by leaving their own home.
Okay, so how would you propose to resolve this then? Because we heard from Jack Lambert this morning, who is Professor of Medicine, that he believes the Chief Medical Officer's advice is too broad. You can't just say to people, don't travel at all. He said there are countries that are safe to travel to. Is the Chief Medical Officer overstepping the mark?
No, I mean, the Chief Medical Officer is giving medical advice in good faith. I mean, the Chief Medical Officer... it tells people that they shouldn't smoke, and it's very clear that smoking is very bad for you and it has very serious medical repercussions, yet people continue to do so and tobacco continues to be sold in our shops. But I suppose, you know, we had the SME recovery sector in yesterday and they were talking about, you know, the government is going at some stage to have to compensate businesses, particularly small businesses, the big, the Googles, the Facebooks, the Intels, they'll survive. But the small family-run businesses, particularly in the hospitality sector, are going to the wall as we speak. And there's going to be a tourism package, I think, as part of the July stimulus.
Sure, but that's a domestic issue. I'm wondering what you would say to Siobhan, Michael, who has saved up for seven years for a foreign holiday. What would you say to her?
I think the government should look at compensating people like Siobhan if they have spent money to go abroad and they decide not to based on the medical advice at the Chief Medical Officer. I think the government should look at compensating them, or at least giving them a voucher to spend, to the value of the money that they've lost, to spend in Ireland. I think that's what the government should do. I'm not in the government. I'm not in a position, no more than the Chief Medical Officer is in a position to do. I'm not in a position to tell the government what to do. The government will make decisions based on all the advice it receives, including, of course, the Chief Medical Officers.
All right. I'm also joined on the line by Professor Rory Brewer, who is in the Department of Public Health and Epidemiology in the Royal College of Surgeons. And Professor, thank you very much for joining me on this. Do you stand behind the Chief Medical Officer's advice on this, that you shouldn't travel, or would you be in line with what Jack Lambert said this morning, that there are countries that are safe to go to?
Thank you, Sarah. I'm broadly supportive of the advice from the Chief Medical Officer. I think the issues around banning what the government should do, I think they've been covered by Dermot and Michael. And what I would like to focus on is assessing the risk. And I think both individual people who are considering making this trip, they need to be enabled to assess the country-level risk. Air bridges can be set up, but 3 or 4 days ago, somebody planning to travel to Melbourne would have felt, well, Australia is very safe. And now, as a result of travellers returning to Australia, returning to Melbourne, something like 300,000 people now are experiencing closures. So there are real risks, and they can develop quite quickly. I think in individuals may feel that they have to make the trip for personal reasons, but if they do so, they then need to be well educated around what the risks are and how to minimise them. The risks are in the terminal building, in the plane, transport to and from the airport. I am particularly worried about airlines who try to fill their planes, including the middle seat, who appear to think that just recommending masks, face coverings is the cornerstone. It's not the cornerstone. In fact, somebody wearing a mask sitting in the aisle seat and the window seat are blowing droplets often out to the side of the mask. This has been shown in a study from England. And people need to focus then, if they are making the trip, on their behaviour while on holiday. And some of those reports earlier from people makes one think that they haven't really taken on board. The risks are then about what they do indoors, going to pubs. Mm. And
so would you
what
travel,
are the consequences,
Rory,
for others?
On the basis of all that, would you fly?
I wouldn't go on a non-essential trip. I think I will find myself going on an essential trip in a couple of months' time. And I think people who are considering it need to think the consequences of bringing the virus back home. At the moment, we're in a very good place in this country. There seems to be a low level of community virus circulation, though I think it is actually higher than is being reported at the moment. But it's the embers, the burning embers, the embers that are blown into Ireland. They are going to have consequences for vulnerable people. Some of the people who were being interviewed there didn't sound they were that vulnerable. And ultimately, if we get a lot of eruptions of outbreaks over the summer into the autumn, we must think about our health workers and the impact on them. And people looking at the programmes from St. James's over the last couple of nights will be very conscious. It would be intolerable to reintroduce the virus through making an unnecessary trip to another country.
And do you think it would be helpful, Rory, if the government did, as Michael is suggesting, set up some sort of compensation fund for people who are not being refunded by the airlines? That would help people, convince them to stay at home rather than have them think, well, I've spent the money anyway, I'm going to lose it if I don't go.
Look, these are good ideas. I think I'll restrict myself to talking about the public health dimensions.
All right.
But I think people need to assess the risks first.
Okay, stay with this.
And
I do want to come
the health of those around them.
Perfect. I do want to come back to you on the issue of pubs in just a minute, and I want to move on to the issue of pubs. But Michael, right. Just on the compensation fund idea, do you have any idea how much that will cost? Any idea?
I don't, but I mean, there is going to have to be a massive... I mean, you know, it's clear from what we've heard at the committee from both economists, from the Fiscal Advisory Council, and from the representatives of small business, there's going to have to be a massive stimulus.
Is that not the whole point, though, that there has to be priorities? And while it's very sad for Siobhan and Mayo and many other people who are losing vast sums of money that they have saved up to go on holidays, that that's just one of the downsides or the unfortunate side effects of COVID-19, and we just have to accept
it. But one of the sectors that we have to compensate and one of the sectors that we have to get off their knees is the hospitality sector, the tourist sector in Ireland, because we're not having tourists coming in, partly because of the confusion. And again, you talked about confusion between law and recommendation. Mm. Exactly the same confusion exists with regard to quarantining in Ireland. People who want to come to Ireland think they have to quarantine, but they don't have to quarantine. There's no requirement. There's no legal requirement to quarantine in Ireland.
But the medical advice is to quarantine.
Well, the medical advice is to quarantine, but there's no legal requirement to quarantine. You're required to fill in a form to say where you're going to be. Apparently, they ring you up to check that you are where you said you were going to be.
You don't think it's working?
Well, I don't know how ringing somebody up and saying, like, you told us you'd be in Bundoran. Are you in Bundoran? No, of course I'm in Bundoran. I don't really see how that verifies anything or how that acts as a deterrent. There is no legal requirement to quarantine. I mean, I specifically
should
asked...
Should there be?
Well, I think there has to be one or the other. You can't have this confusion and this grey area. Either the government think it's important to quarantine or they don't think it's important to quarantine. But like having a confusion so that some people don't come to Ireland because they think they have to quarantine, some people do come to Ireland and quarantine, and some people don't bother doing either. Some people come to Ireland and don't bother quarantining because they know they don't have to. I think that's not a very satisfactory set of events.
All but right, Rory, I just want to go back to her because I have loads of people to talk to. Rory, I want to come back to you on that actually briefly before I go to Donal O'Keefe in the Vintners Association on that issue of quarantine, because we did see in the papers today that only 60 to 70% of people are even getting a call. And as Michael is saying here, to check if they're quarantining as they should be. And as Michael is saying here, even if they get the call, you know, they could be sitting on the beach taking the call saying, I'm in my back garden, couldn't they?
A lot has to be done about making people self-responsible. And we also have to recognise that the controls that we're trying to put in place are evolving. One of the recent initiatives now that could make a big difference is the contact tracing app. And I think it should be essential. Anybody coming back into the country has to download it. And that would include visitors coming from other seas. And we need to make sure that people are aware of the importance of early symptom responses. I don't think the message is getting through to maybe some of the groups. We know that there's a lot more virus transmission happening among young people. And they will also be, many of those will be the people who will have saved up money and who will be going abroad. So we need to look at behaviour because that's what's going to really set this off like a wildfire.
All right. Well, as I said, I'm joined on the line by Donal O'Keefe as well, who has been waiting very patiently. Thank you, Donal, Chief Executive of the Licensed Vintners Association. And Donal, it's reported in today's Irish Daily Mail that some pubs which reopened on Monday have already been flouting the COVID-19 guidelines regarding food and safety. The Mail is reporting today that its reporter was able to order 2 glasses of wine without ordering food in a South Dublin pub yesterday and was also able to stay beyond the 105-minute time limit without being asked to leave by staff. What's your reaction to that?
Well, we believe the vast majority of pubs are complying with the guideline. The vast majority of customers are complying with the guideline, and that is critically important. We all know to our cost the consequences of this pandemic. It's a public health emergency, and all businesses, including pubs, must follow the state guidelines around public health.
Yeah. What makes you believe that the vast majority of pubs are following the guidelines? Do you have any evidence?
Well, we have our interaction with members. We know what we hear on the ground. It's only 48 hours. We're only in our third day open, so we've had 2 evenings trading. So we do believe the majority of pubs are. Certainly, there is some anecdotal evidence that some pubs are not. And in that scenario, the authorities need to act quickly. it is not acceptable that any business or any pub flouts the guidelines.
What would you like authorities to do?
Well, first of all, we want clarity around who's responsible for enforcing these guidelines. Is it the Gardaí? Is it the Health and Safety Authority under for places of work? Is it the HSE? And secondly, we need clear, unambiguous sanctions for businesses who fail to follow the guidelines. Those are simply not clear to us today.
What should those sanctions be? Should they be shut down on the spot?
I think if there's a clear, unambiguous evidence of the guidelines being disregarded, businesses should be shut on the spot. This is a public health emergency. The risk of reinfection is there. Businesses cannot play with the health of their staff or their customers. So, absolutely, businesses that are not complying should be dealt with on the spot.
We have a text in here, Donal, from a listener saying, a very well-known pub I visited last night had no problem letting me and my friends in with no booking, and we just bought 3 packs of peanuts. What a joke.
Yeah, absolutely. What a joke. I mean, that's just not acceptable. You know, we find it unbelievable that 15 weeks after a closure, with 1,700 people having tragically lost their lives, with 25,000 people having been hospitalised, that businesses would take risks with the health of their staff or their customers. This is an enormously serious issue, and both businesses and customers must follow the public health advice.
And it is, as you say, it's very serious. And it's also, if we're getting these reports on the first 2 days of reopening, and we're talking about a Monday and a Tuesday, what's it going to be like at the weekend?
Well, we would hope programmes like this and the ongoing attention on it would mean that businesses and customers will follow with the guidelines as we move forward. We're engaged with the Gardaí again today to agree a statement calling on all businesses to act responsibly. And we have no doubt that the Gardaí in particular will be active on this issue as we move towards the weekend. It is really important that that the guidelines are seen to be enforced.
Rory Brewer, what's your thoughts on going into a pub and what we're likely to see there over the next couple of days? And is it safe?
Thanks, Sarah. I'd actually like to support most of what Donal said there. I think what shocked us and myself and 4 other professors of public health who wrote the newspapers last week, these guidelines were produced 10 days before the reopening of pubs that were self-designating as restaurants. And the guidelines were produced by Ireland's National Tourism Authority, supported by the Department of Tourism. I'd like to know where the Department of Health is in this. And I think the department, there's a new minister in place now, should be taking back control of it. There's actually much that's good in the guidelines, but they're mainly focused, as the Health and Safety Authority would focus, on the staff and on cleaning. They're not focused on the real big problems which have emerged over the first couple of days, and that is customer behaviour. And I think I would sympathise with those pub managers who, as Donald said, there's no clarity around sanctions, around enforcement, around compliance, around monitoring. You couldn't do that all in 10 days. I have some specific suggestions which I think would actually strengthen the guidelines, and that's because they come from a public health perspective. You know, you don't expect a tourist authority to think of this. One would be screening all people who come into a restaurant or into a pub. You could do a quick screen in 30 seconds, you know, checking has anybody had symptoms over the last week suggestive of COVID, and a temperature check. A lot of us are experiencing this now when we go into certain venues. Secondly, what's good in the guidelines is they say that the booking party, one member should provide contact details. But that should include those who come in off the street. I was at a hairdresser yesterday, and before I left, I didn't realise this was going to happen. The hairdresser took down my name, my phone number, and I really realised what this was. Mm. Very responsible the hairdressers are. I would have the new app on the phone, mandatory for would-be customers. We should look at what are the things in the environment of the pub that are going to make the pub a super transmitter of viruses. Sound, noise, the noise of human people talking loudly, which is very typical of the Irish pub, and would not be beyond us to actually introduce and to support pub managers in controlling the sound levels.
How?
And a lot has to be done on customer education.
How do you make a quiet pub?
Ah, I don't think we've really tried this before, but when we talk about, well, the pubs are open on the continent, when we go there, we find the environment is quite different. And our culture is, when we get together, we all like to talk and many of us don't listen at all. So I actually just checked up and I found that the Environmental Protection Agency have actually produced guidelines on noise control in different scenarios. And I believe when the study is done, it's going to show a direct correlation between the noise level, human noise level in a pub, and the level of droplet spread. So right. It is about a culture change, but actually you could use noise meters. When people are too loud, the managers need to be enabled to say, now quiet them down at that table there. Stop shouting across to your friends.
Oh, Rory, I don't know if any of that is likely to happen. I mean, it's a nice idea, but Michael, we're almost out of time on this. I just want to ask you specifically about this issue that Donal O'Keefe is raising about enforcement, who should do it, when it should be done.
Well, I don't know. I mean, the regulations, there were regulations brought in by the previous Minister for Health. They weren't published until this morning. I couldn't find them. So therefore, I don't know how you can enforce. The idea of laws is that people can find out what they are, regulate their behaviour accordingly. If you can't find out what the law is, I don't see how you could possibly enforce it. I found them this morning, 2 days, 3 days into them. It doesn't say who's going to enforce it. They're not penal provisions, so it's not clear. But for me, the bigger issue is that, the regulations bring in restrictions with regard to pubs where an affected area's order remains in place. Now, when this outbreak started, Minister Simon Harris brought in an affected area's order in respect of the whole country. So the whole country was affected by COVID-19. We know that the whole country is not affected by COVID-19 now. I've no doubt that there are pockets of COVID-19 in the country and they need to be dealt with. But treating the country as one unit seems to me to be no longer feasible. And I would be particularly concerned if there was an outbreak somewhere or a spike somewhere, that the whole country would be shut down. Whereas in Britain and many parts of the world now, they're taking a much more regionalised approach and we need to move to that. The last thing is, I'm baffled how having a substantial meal acts as a barrier to contracting COVID-19. There may be some medical reason that I'm not aware of, but eating a substantial meal, I just don't see how that protects you.
Well, we haven't managed to figure that out in this programme either, but thank you very much for joining us this morning. That's Michael McNamara, Dermot Jewell, Professor Rory Brewer and Donal O'Keefe. We'll be talking about junior ministers next.